Welcome all of you, particularly Professor Mayatula, whom I'm told will be part of the furniture, not so late, not so soon, but will be part of us. You welcome, bro. Let me welcome the department and all those who have come to make presentations, who have made submissions. State law advisors and all others, including the media. Today is the beginning of another very intensive journey, that of establishing the independent systems and market operator here in Parliament. Not that it hasn't started. Starting by ensuring that there's appropriate legislation on it. The first step we're going to do is to have public hearings, which will be followed by deliberations, and which we hope will be able to conclude our work by early June. We set aside 4 days for public hearings. Initially, we had about 15 submissions with 13 requests for oral presentations. There's been about one or two withdrawals for oral presentations, but there's been an addition as well. I think our submissions are close to 20 now. So we're still on track to have 4 days for public hearings. We should have started with a very short briefing, honorable members, on the legislative process through the legal services, but the person who was supposed to do that had a family crisis right early in the morning today, with all the preparations he had done, and couldn't even get anyone in the office to sort of take his place. Apologies for that. Having said, we started at 8:30 and we didn't as committed. Also, the addition is that whilst we may have received a briefing from the Department of Energy on the ISMO bill in the past, it was informal because the bill had not been submitted formally to Parliament. Now that it has been submitted, can I just plead, honorable members, we just take a few minutes for the department to formally submit it. I'm sure if there would be anything that they would add to what they've done earlier, they are welcome to do so. But also we're doing this on the assumption that their formal submission will be fairly short at this time. I must also highlight that from my side, I may from time to time be very unpopular because we have to be very sensitive to time and also be quite balanced in allowing people to make presentations. Having gone through the submissions, some are quite substantive and we've tried as much as possible within time constraint to be as liberal as is possible to allow each and every of the people who have come to make presentation to have as much time as is possible to make their point heard because of the nature and complexity in some of the submissions. Let me not take more time and actually welcome the department to take us through very briefly on the bill as formally submitted now to Parliament. Oh, Yes, just an oversight from my side. Can we get apologies from the committee secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. Only the one apology from Honourable Sir Lau, who's on sick leave, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. In that case, can I welcome Dr. Apane with his team to take us through.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Pombi Apani from the Department of Energy, reinforced by a whole lot of colleagues. I'm not going to take the opportunity to introduce them, Chair, but...
Dr. Apani, this is a big room, it's not V475. We have to be a bit closer to the microphone.
Yes, Chair, I was just saying that... The team here today will share the presentation as required. Maybe perhaps to start by apologizing on behalf of our Minister and Director General who are not here. We have a parallel booking as well, and we had then decided to split this way. But then, Chair, I take the cue from your comment also that this has been presented before. So this is not going to be a very long and detailed presentation, and apologies that you might have seen it before. But just to also give you a refresher, if you like, on the provisions around the independent system and market operator entity and the legislation that establishes it. So what we're going to cover today, very high level, what is ISMO, what is the Independent System and Market Operator, what are some of the issues that we're trying to address, we call it conundrum. Then we will reflect on the existing setup within the electricity sector, and then how we propose to introduce the ISMO, in other words, in terms of its structure, some rationale why we're wanting to do that. And then in conclusion, just to touch on some of the provisions in the Independent System and Market Operator Bill itself. Okay, just to start off, we need to indicate what ISMO is about, or what it is. We always use acronyms, and forgive us for that. But ISMO is an acronym for the Independent System and Market Operator. Independent in the sense that it is autonomous from its key stakeholders on the supply side and on the demand side. It is in relation to the system, which is the national, well, we call it the National Electricity Transmission System, but essentially it's your electricity grid, including your distribution system. And then there's a reference to the market being the buying and selling of electricity from all the electricity generators and then selling them to customers on the other side. So basically the system operator, system and market operator, sits at the center of those arrangements between the buying of electricity and its selling on the other side. It is well documented that we are running out of capacity and we need to build more capacity very urgently. There's also been recognition that in terms of the requirements or in relation to the requirements, government capital alone will not be able to fund those requirements, and as such we need to find alternative ways or parallel ways to introduce fresh investment into the sector. There is also some concern about the impact of steep tariff increase and the extent to which they would have adverse impact on not only industrial growth but also certain socio-political problems would emanate from those steep tariff increases. Over and above that, we have also strategically decided as government that we need to mobilize private sector funding and introduce it the different infrastructure programs the government has aspirations to conclude. And in relation to that, is that there is a need that the level playing field is the best approach. In other words, it's the most facilitative for private players to play, particularly where there is dominance by one or other player. And we also need to have some clarity around the rules of engagement, be it on, you know, the market formation, on dispatch rules, you know, and so on, so that there is certainty going forward as to how the game is played. We have reflected on the tariff increases that are required, but if you're going to be introducing the private sector as well, there is also acceptance and recognition that it needs to be facilitated through long-term contracts, and those contracts have to reflect some risk allocation that, you know, recognizes the risks and allocates them appropriately, and at the same time that those risks are rewarded in a way that is commensurate with the risks. We believe that at the same time as we're introducing all of these new investments, right, that we have now reached the point where it has become inevitable that without appropriate demand response, in other words, appropriate recognition of the pricing of electricity, we might not be able to achieve the energy efficiency aspirations that we have, and therefore that the pricing signal that needs to be sent out there needs to be an appropriate one. Incidentally, we do not go into much of the detail in terms of this. This is just a framework, an institutional revamp process. But parallel to it elsewhere is a whole reflection and intervention in the pricing space. We have touched on the issue around energy efficiency as such, but in particular, one needs to squeeze as much more additional efficiencies out of the different players as well, be it you know, the generators, the operators of the network, but also, you know, in relation to the users on the other side. So this is really an attempt to try and make sure that, you know, we optimize South Africa's arrangements under the ensuing circumstances of a supply and shortage. This, we believe, bodes well for a viable electricity supply industry in a way that, first of all, we would be able to introduce some competition, right? Competition between the different generators to the extent that is possible. We're not talking about competition in the ultimate sense. We recognize also that some of the elements within the value chain are natural monopolies, including the wires side of things. We're also wanting to ensure that some of the other aspirations, particularly relating to clean energies, are facilitated, that we're able to introduce them in a manner that is facilitated, that perhaps that would also unleash some of the technological innovation that is required for the electricity supply industry to sustain itself well into the future. We are currently dominated by, if you like, your traditional fuel, in this case, coal-fired power generation, and we're wanting to change the paradigm as well. We have mentioned the issue around leveraging new financial resources, you know, beyond what government can provide. Again, very quickly, I'm sure you have seen this before, but just a quick reflection is that at the moment, this is the current state with the electricity value chain. I don't know if you can see from here. No, my pointer doesn't work so nicely. It's supposed to work. But anyway, I will try and use this other pointer here. So basically what we have is the production side, which is all your power generation, right? Please forget the 70% for now. But in this instance, Eskom currently dominating all the power production. We have a few generators outside of Eskom, mainly imports, in particular Kaurabasa, as an alternative generator outside of the country. And then we have some independent power producers. And at that point, when we did this slide presentation, we had just started the introduction of the renewable energy independent power producers. All of this power goes into the transmission system, I call that the wires system, and that wires business is currently controlled by Eskom in a vertically integrated manner, if you like, and to the extent that it goes into the retail segment, it is also controlled by Eskom on the key industrial customer side, and then you have municipalities taking a portion of that wires business as well. Now, in the middle, which is of relevance today, right, is an entity called the system operator, and the system operator warehouses, if you like, the National Control Center. And the National Control Center is the entity that is responsible for balancing electricity supply and demand instantaneously, amongst other functions. Right? They also are responsible as the wholesaler. In other words, they will be responsible for buying all the power from the producers, forming the market, and then clearing it in relation to the demand on the other side of the equation. I'm not going to go into the detail regarding what all of this means in terms of the different color codes, except to indicate perhaps that if you follow the red, what it means is that this is the power flow, so the power flows from the generators into the wires and then out into the market, into the distributors, including me and you in the households. Then you also have you have the trading arrangements. The trading arrangements is the sellers on the side, which is the blue. They go through the wholesaler, if you like, and then you charge the retailer sitting on the other side. So more or less, I think this is the structure of the current electricity supply industry. What we are proposing with the introduction of the independent system and market operator, a number of changes. First of all, is that you would have this block now in the dotted, which would be Eskom Holdings, and Eskom Holdings would continue to own its current fleet of generators, right, which is this part here. They would also own the wires business and the portion of the distribution that they currently own. You would have outside of that, you would have your independent power producers, both conventional fuel-fired, if you like, and the renewables sitting side by side with that. Then you would have a new state-owned company, independent system and market operator, sitting outside of Eskom and being responsible for those functions as indicated there. The first one, if I can go into a little bit of detail, is the planning function, and we have just concluded a process that maps our electricity generation aspirations for the period up to 2030. And beyond that, that function would then be assumed by ISMO once put in place. ISMO would also be responsible, if I can move to this other easy one, which is the buying function. Currently, the buying function is a little bit of a legal issue because the procurement portion of it is done by the department, and then the so-called buying function is done by Eskom. Basically what it means is that the department is the middleman in terms of procurement in order to deal with this perception that perhaps Eskom would be on both sides of the equation, and therefore you needed somebody that was not necessarily playing on both sides. So ultimately, the independent system and market operator would be responsible for that function completely, and government would step out of that space. Then we have the national control, which is responsible for the balancing function, right? In other words, making sure that we keep the lights on. I guess you might well be aware, electricity cannot be stored in the traditional way, and we have to meet supply and demand, or we have to meet the demand at the same time, and therefore that dispatch function that follows the load is currently done, and the system operator, and they will continue doing that. The last part is the wholesale portion of the functions or the functionality, and basically what this refers to is a situation whereby all the buying would be done from the generators through this particular entity. And as you might well appreciate, the different generators sell the power at different levels. For example, the nuclear cost of generation is different to your coal, is different to your renewable energy, is different to your gas, and so on and so forth. So ultimately, we aggregate all of those different costs, if you like, or the different selling levels relating to the different generators. That wholesale price, or that aggregated price, would then be the one that gets sold on the other side through a tariff structure. Now, we're not going to go into the detail around the retail tariff structures. We're talking wholesale for the purposes of this exercise here. And we're saying that the independent system and market operator would be the one that is responsible for aggregating all of those different tariffs. Currently what we have ESCOM being responsible for that function, and consequently ESCOM is the one that makes those tariff applications, or rather the tariff application, the multi-year price determination application to the regulator. And there would be consequences for that with the introduction of the independent system and market operator. Municipalities, just to conclude the picture, municipalities would sit outside of the ESCOM wires business. We are not, you know, attempting through this exercise to deal with that particular issue of electricity distribution industry restructuring. We're parking it exactly as it obtains right now. And I think I've covered perhaps the bulk of that. Maybe just the last point is that there is an issue then with, well, on the retail side in relation to the large customers, the so-called key industrial customers. Just very quickly, key industrial customers are defined in a particular way as those customers who consume at a contiguous site more than 100 gigawatt hours per annum. Now, those key industrial customers get treated in a particular way, right? And in this country, and forgive me for getting it wrong slightly, but more or less 60%, right, of all the electricity production in this country is used to service those key industrial customers. So if you can imagine just how critical they are, you know, in terms of driving our electricity demand. So we'll come back to the situation around how we want to deal with the wholesaling and the aggregation aspects of this proposal as it relates to key industrial customers as well. Chairperson, we are here today in order to present the bill, the institutional arrangements that are being proposed in order to create this bill. And maybe to also flag very early on that the process of creating the independent system and market operator is going to be a transitional one. It's not going to be a big bang approach that happens overnight. Yes, we will create the entity ISMO, but to make ISMO functional, you know, end to end, so to speak, you commensurate with the functions that have been prescribed for it, would be a process that is going to take some time. It is fraught with certain risks that we would like to flag, that we would hopefully be able to deal with as we process the transition. And we're not going to go into too much detail on some of those issues. And I'm sure that during the public hearings, you will hear a lot about some of the problems and perhaps even solutions how to deal with those. What we're merely doing here is to present the structure, the institutional structure around the bill, around the ISMO, its functionality, its governance arrangements, and I'm sure that you would have read some of its objects in terms of the legislation that is being proposed here. So we're saying that essentially it's a new juristic person with a board appointed by the Minister of Energy. It is to be independent, and it must sustain itself financially in order for it to deliver its mandate. It would also involve the establishment of an electricity wholesale function that provides future opportunity for qualifying customers to purchase electricity at a wholesale price. I forgive the typo there. ISMO is to be the buyer of the power, of the power from electricity generators in a transparent manner. So basically, ISMO would have absolutely no particular commercial interest in the transaction, be it on the supply side or on the demand side or on the selling side, and to do that in a manner that seeks to make those transactions transparent, but to also squeeze as much efficiencies out of the value chain as possible. Dispatch, we have mentioned on the issue of dispatch. We believe that perhaps for the first time you will have a situation where whomsoever of the generators is meeting the demand, you know, on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, or on an aggregate basis, would become transparent. Okay, we've touched on the issue around planning for new generation capacity, and this is mainly the integrated resource planning process, which would then align with government policy. Quickly, the functions is the buying of power, wholesale, system operations, which include dispatch. And what else did we leave out here? I think, okay, the planning function. I think we did touch on that. But by and large, we're saying those four functionalities form the core of what we expect ISMO to be doing. A state-owned company, 100% state-owned, so we're not talking about privatization of parts of Eskom, which is saying that it is segregated out of Eskom. It's not the introduction of a new entity that is going to be sold as such. In fact, I imagine that nobody would be interested in buying ISMO because it's a neutral player that does not, you know, make any profits out of their activities as such. Okay, and then also in relation to ISMO's functions, is that in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act, trading has been defined as a licensable activity. In other words, the buying and selling of electricity, which is what ISMO would be undertaking, and consequently, ISMO would have to obtain a license from the regulator, and therefore it would fall under the regulatory framework that NERSA is responsible for. Just in terms of how it sustains itself, ISMO would be supported by various funding options, including loans and guarantees from government, that particularly in the initial stages, ISMO would require a lot of government support in order for it to become attractive for those generators to sell power to ISMO in a manner that allows those generators to have access to the market and be confident that they will be paid back. And we're saying that ISMO, in terms of the provisions of this law, might be required to pay interest on any loans that they would be advanced by government through the Minister of Finance. ISMO would go through the necessary, or shall we say, the traditional Public Finance Management Act requirements, you know, the submission of business plans for approval, you know, reporting in terms of their performance, and so on. So it would basically be an entity that would traditionally at some point come to Parliament and have to account around the things that it has achieved and so on. We're making provision for certain minimum requirements within its business plan, its financial plan, including the projects, its operational costs, performance indicators, and as I've already indicated, this is, you know, fairly commonplace within state-owned companies. Perhaps just the last few comments to close, Chair, not to take too long, is that there has been a very, if you like, long process to deliberate over the introduction of the independent system and market operator. As you're well aware, it has taken some time for it to be tagged and to be processed through this committee. And there has been a lot of engagement with different stakeholders around that. We've received public comments in the consultation. This has been through the NEDLAC process. There is a NEDLAC report. And then we reflect on some of the comments that have been received. Some of the critical ones relate, for example, that there might be a need for independent transmission lines in order to deal with some of the risks that have been already identified. And we're saying that a lot more work is required before one could get to that kind of decision in relation to independent transmission lines. So the package as it stands now does not involve any taking out of transmission lines. Then there's the issue of the willing buyer, willing seller problem. Just very briefly, there is a sense that perhaps given the supply shortages, one should be able to, you know, have on a merchant basis, so to speak, have the ability to introduce new generation capacity and sell it to whoever is willing to buy it, and that perhaps the current regulatory framework does not address it. ISMO can perhaps play a role, but the full answer cannot be found within the ISMO framework alone. You know, so there are a whole lot of other initiatives on the regulatory side that need to be put in place in order to ensure that not only is it in place, but there is no perception that the willing buyer, willing seller opportunity cannot be facilitated in this country. Then the board itself, there has been a number of questions around the constitution of the board, whether it's a competency-based board or whether it is a stakeholder representative a board, in terms of which, you know, various industry stakeholders would have representation on this board, and it's something that we need to perhaps reflect on throughout these public hearings. Then there's the issue there's the issue around the allocation of megawatts in terms of the IRP and the licensing of the different generators. And I think some of these issues, and this is by no means exhaustive, is the comments. You will hear them firsthand as the different stakeholders present them. But we thought that perhaps there might be some issues that we needed to respond to ourselves outside, because the answers lie outside of this that is being presented as the independent system and market operator. And Chair, I think that's about the only comments we'd like to make at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dara Pane. We need to start getting ready now for presentation of the public hearings. As I say, this even should have been even briefer, because Dara Pane just went through what he had done, but he's done his part. Helped us to refresh our memories as well, so that we can be conditioned to get presentations. The first presentation is going to be from Energy. Is it in? I'm a bit far now. Energy Intensive User Group, EIUG. Mr. Microso, is EIUG around? Yes, if you could come over to us whilst I'm shifting back to my position. I'm being persuaded, the honourable members, to give a few minutes to questions. I thought we just refreshed our minds. So, we just take the last chair, whilst at least the IUG is still preparing itself. Questions, honourable members? If, yes, Madam Lord.
Chairperson, thank you. Just two questions or three questions, just for clarifying the issues. I just want to establish what becomes, I mean, there are things that are sort of fairly new to us, given that initially when we dealt with the informal briefing, some things could not have been incorporated in the bill. I just want to, Mr. Apan, to briefly explain to us how does the planning function work in relation to the powers of the minister? Because you are saying ISMO will be entirely responsible for planning. But in the legislation, I mean, I think Section 4, it talks about modeling of scenarios and providing the results to the minister for the purpose of developing the integrated resource plan. And secondly, on the issue of the expansion plan for the transmission lines, how does this thing work in practice? Who gives the instruction to Eskom to invest in the transmission lines? Given that you are saying ISMO must provide the necessary input, I assume this necessary input is to the minister. So would I be correct to say that the assumption is that the minister would then give the instruction to Eskom to expand the transmission lines? If you could clarify those issues. The rest, I think we can deal with it during deliberation phase, because I just believe there are certain things that you need to rephrase in the bill which are not clearly worded. For instance, Section 13, Subsection 4, where you say the minister and the nomination committee make a recommendation to the minister, it's not clear, the sentence. So, I mean, the other things we can deal with during deliberations. I think those two would be a bit, would be critical for us.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I think that the question relates to the, as I understood it, relates to the powers of the minister vis-a-vis what is ISMO's role in the planning function and also in relation to transmission expansion planning and perhaps the implementation of those two functions. First of all, as I indicated, this is a transitional process. Right? So we have an existing regulatory framework largely covered by the Electricity Regulation Act, which makes certain provisions vis-a-vis the powers of the minister. Right? And currently, NERSA is required by law to implement government policy, including the integrated resource plan. I think that's the wording in the Electricity Regulation Act. So effectively what it means is that there would be some government policy, right, which manifests perhaps in policy documents, cabinet decisions, etc. And NERSA would be required to implement that. Right? So if you think about the separation, it's like the one operates within a framework that somebody else provides. Government provides the policy framework, NERSA implements it. Now, insofar as it relates to planning itself, he says there shall be an integrated resource plan. Right? And we have gone through a process largely led by government and not NERSA, right? Because government's policy aspirations are reflected in that. In fact, you might also remember that the policy adjusted scenario within the IRP, right, is the one that, you know, would have taken, you know, if you like, precedence over a whole lot of other possibilities. So it is in the implementation of that policy framework by government that the answer lies. That government does that, government steps out, somebody else implements. The planning function going forward would now be undertaken by ISMO as opposed to government itself. But ISMO does that within a government policy framework, so that does not change. Right? So there would still be a pronouncement of different government policy positions, which would then inform the plan, and then somebody else would be responsible for making sure that the plan is aligned with government policies and that it will also be implemented, you know, independently on that basis. In relation to transmission, currently what happens is that it's a black box, quite frankly, is that, you know, these are the aspirations on the supply side, there is a demand somewhere, and then, you know, there is a need to evacuate the power or to interconnect and so on, and that gets done, you know, within the utility itself. There is a sense also that given the introduction of renewable energy generators, that perhaps that needs to be a lot more transparent, because one can then dictate where the lines or where the investments must go in order to evacuate and that power. So you have a transition from what is into something that is, if you like, aspirational. And, you know, I'm the first one to, you know, to accept that there might well be certain, you know, adjustments that are required in the transition in order to make it work a lot more efficiently than now. I hope that provides it.
Thank you very much. Can I then hand over to Mr. Rousseau from the EIULG?
Honourable Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to address you and just quickly present you in summary form around the written submission that we've made. Chair, it's interesting, I'm reminded that somebody once said that life is a journey and that we start off from a particular point and we travel our way through life and time, and then one day we arrive back at the place where we started, but the interesting thing is we then know the place for the first time. I was reminded this morning that there are members of the honourable members of the committee, some of them, who sat here in this very room, I think it was round about period 1998, and I know some of my colleagues sitting behind me were also there, where what was debated then was the Energy White Paper. And Chair, I will remind members and my colleagues that in the discussion of that white paper, which is, I think, a very good paper at the time, the issue of this particular ISMO, maybe a different name, was discussed and it was agreed to be done. So we've come a long journey and we're very pleased, Chair, that in fact it's now arrived here in Parliament and we are discussing it in fact. Chair, the EIG supports the need for an ISMO. We think it's very appropriate and possibly even long overdue. We believe that, and this is quite important, that the ISMO, contrary to a lot of misperceptions, really will drive higher efficiencies, both in terms of capital costs and operation efficiencies. And we believe that ISMA will play an important role in this regard, and I'm pleased to note that the department has noted that in their presentation as well. The ISMA is a critical and very major step to level the playing field, which is not level at this point in time in the electricity supply industry, Chair. The ISMA is also very much in line, and we did quite a lot of research around the world, and so what we're doing here in South Africa is pretty much in line with what's happening in most jurisdictions of the world with regards to a so-called ISMO. But this is quite important, Chair, that we do believe it's important that we recognize that the ISMO is not a destination. The bill as it currently stands, and again, I think the department highlighted that, is not an end in itself, but it's rather a vehicle to move the industry forward to become more efficient and more effective for the benefit of all South Africans. And consequently, the bill sets out on an evolutionary path rather than a revolutionary approach, which we support and agree with. But the big question is, will the bill in its current form as it's written and phrased achieve its objectives? And we suggest, Chair, that seriously there needs to be looked at the phrasing of some issues, and also to ensure that clarification is given on other issues. I think the reason for this, Chair, is that we wish this bill to be set up in a manner for success. and that it shouldn't be in a form that, that could possibly spell a failure. We do not want the bill to fail. So it's quite important, we think, that certain things need to be looked at in terms of phraseology. And secondly, certain things have to be clarified, which I'll quickly touch on. Chair, we believe this picture is very, very important because it summarizes in a simple form, if you will, if you look in the middle there, it says non-ESCOM. There are really only four forms of generation. So if you look at that diagram, you'll see the first two columns is own use. What that means is there are people out there that are producing currently, as we speak already, electricity for their own use. So the simplest example is a person out in the rural area that puts on a wind generator that wishes to supply his own electricity, or conversely, a factory that produces waste heat or energy and wishes to capture that energy to supplement their demand by producing their own energy, normally referred to as cogeneration. Or you could have a person that's got a wind farm, let's say, for example, in the Cape, and they wish to sell green energy to customers in the Highveld, in Gauteng, or maybe in KwaZulu-Natal. So that's people who wish to generate power for themselves. Then we have the sellers. That's people who produce power specifically as a business, and they wish to sell to a so-called national buyer, which we understand in this case is ISMO, and that's fine. That already exists, Chair, and it's working fairly well. But clearly we need to try and get the maximum that the potential for that, as stated earlier, to reduce the burden on the state to fund for this expansions. Then there's the last category, wheel to customers and bilaterals, and this is truly where there is many people who wish to procure energy, in this case, let's say green energy, or hydropower, or whatever the case may be, and are willing to on a willing buyer, willing basis, a willing seller basis, to contract with those suppliers directly. So what this picture shows, Chair, is those are the four forms of generation, and we need to carefully consider to what extent the ISMO wishes to control those sources. To give an example, on the very left-hand side, where people produce energy for themselves, on their site for themselves, let's say, for example, somebody producing power at their home, we don't see that the ISMO wishes to be involved in those transactions, save possibly to understand around the capacity for planning purposes. That makes sense. But to regulate that does not make sense. Similarly, for somebody wishes to produce power for themselves, but they are remote from their consumption source and simply wishes to wheel that power, we also don't believe that the extent to which ISMO needs to control that is necessary. The last part of the slide is just to demonstrate the extent to which the current playing fields are not level. And what I've done is I've just highlighted some key issues. So if you look on the very left-hand side, you'll see that guaranteed cost recovery, that means that form of generation has virtually 100% guaranteed cost recovery if it's green, and if it's red, it has very little ability to guarantees of cost recovery. Then access to low-cost capital. The next one is protection against risk and, for example, unforeseen circumstances. Pass-through of levies, the pass-through of taxes, and generator backup, meaning that if the generation plant fails, for whatever reason, there is backup. And the colors indicate to you just the extent to which the playing field is not level. In the case of Eskom, it's virtually all green, i.e. that Eskom have guaranteed revenue through the NERSA regulatory acts, but at the same time, they also have recourse to recover costs. They have access to low capital because of the sovereign guarantees that they have. They have nearly complete protection against risk because of the cover from their sovereign risk. They pass through levies, taxes, and they also have full generator backup by the fleet that is owned by Eskom. But if you then look at the other forms of generation in terms of the colors, you will see that they are not green to the extent that Eskom is, and consequently, we believe the ISMO plays an important part and complemented by the Electricity Regulations Act as still to be amended to get these bars as close as possible to green. And because it's a transition, it more than likely will not all be green on day one, but it's a journey. So we wish to acknowledge the good progress that has been made to bring the bill to Parliament, but we wish to highlight a few issues. One, in terms of definitions, in terms of the functions, in terms of the Electricity Regulatory Act, in terms of the viability, the transitional provisions, and then I'll just end off with some concluding remarks. I think the important thing here in terms of definitions, Chair, is to make the point that in the bill as it currently stands and it's the way it's phrased, things are not clear, particularly in definitions, and we've highlighted some of them here. For example, the functions are not adequately defined. For example, it could be read that it includes municipal systems under ISMA jurisdiction, and it also is not clear as to who are the actual customers who will buy from ISMA. For example, should the ISMA include, for example, own generators? We believe not, or co-generations, because it's not an issue of buying and selling in that instance. And these issues at the moment are left to ministerial discretion. And then obviously, as I said, customers need to be defined. So there is issues around definitions and clarification of that in the current phraseology of the bill. The next one is the functions. And I think the question was asked by the honorary member as well as responded to by the department with regards to the powers with regards to planning. I fully agree with the department that the ultimate competency and authority with regards to planning lies with government and through the minister. But this is not clear enough in a sense that government guide the planning process by setting very clear policies. And the policies are inputs into the RP planning. So I believe that just needs to be clarified to make clear. But the ISMA should have the competency and the capabilities and resources to do proper planning under the guidance of government's policies that have been published. And also with regards to transmission network ownership, we understand it's a transitional process, but I think there needs to be some clarity with regards to those functions. If we look at electrical procurement, you will see that there is some clarification that's required around this, and we've highlighted these. We also believe that it does not make sense, as I said earlier, for ISMA to procure own generation because it's actually a contradiction in terms. With regards to tariff, clearly it's a NERSA competence, and they have the right and authority to approve tariffs. But we wish to highlight here again in terms of phraseology that the ISMA has the right to negotiate and design tariffs. Obviously, NERSA will have to approve them, but ISMA won't have the ability to procure new power unless it has the ability to negotiate and design and submit those proposals to NERSA for approval. So it's a clarification of who negotiates and designs it and who approves it. Clearly, NERSA approves it, but the ISMA must have the right to negotiate and design. If we look at governance, there's many references made to the Electricity Regulatory Act, and even the department has highlighted it this morning, but we wish to point out that at the moment, still to be amended. This means that even if the ISMA is approved, it cannot really proceed on the many aspects because the Act in itself needs to be amended. So we're making the point that even as we speak, there's now a codependency between an Act yet to be amended and ISMA, and this doesn't make sense. These things need to be clarified to be brought in line so that the bill is set up for success and not for failure. Also, the bill goes into some issues with regards to control and governance, which we think are unnecessary and overly complicated, which are adequately dealt with under the existing Companies Act, PFMA, and the Labour Relations Act. And we think with reference to those alone, the ISMO governance issues will be adequately dealt with, rather than trying to specify a new set outside those eminently competent pieces of legislation. The governance and viability, we believe that it's important that if the bill is passed, it should include a comment to say that it shouldn't be adding costs to the country, hopefully reducing costs, because the costs for the functions of the bill already exist in various places. So it really should be revenue neutral. However, it raises the costs for its operations, but it shouldn't add additional costs to the people currently paying for electricity. We understand that the bill will make adequate provisions for funding, and I'm pleased to note this morning in the department's presentation this was highlighted. but the bill is silent on the ISMO rights and obligations in respect to customers in terms of who must sell, who may sell, and what about existing customers, existing contracts, and as I said, own generation. So these things need to be clarified. Then the transitional provisions. And I did underline this. I want to make this point that we talk about these things as if it's some inanimate structure out there, an ISMO or whatever it is. But actually, it's about real people. Gee, I want to stress that the functions currently performed by ISMO, wherever they may be, with Eskom, NERSA or the department. It's being performed by real people that exist, very competent and capable people, and the transitional provisions are crucially important to protect their rights and to make sure that we don't lose them in the process. I'll give you one example. We have in South Africa a very competent systems operator and people in system operators who dispatch generation on a second-by-second basis, balancing supply and demand. If we upset this function and the people in that, I think it would have dire consequences for the success of this bill. So we need to be extremely careful in the transitional provisions that we do not upset the people that are currently performing the functions, but rather promote and motivate them in terms of working within the new structure. So the transitional arrangements are crucially important that we do not upset things that are working eminently well at the moment. In conclusion, Chair, we wish to emphasize that we do support this bill. We think it's overdue and it's welcomed. I think our comments, as I said earlier, are aimed at phraseology and clarification, and we wish to put that to the consideration of yourself and your committee. And we do believe that and recognize that it's an evolutionary rather than a revolutionary approach. In other words, that we need to manage the transition as we move forward. And we need to clarify a number of issues which I've highlighted, such as customers, the role and responsibility of ISMO, an implementation strategy that is clear, although this has been assigned, it would appear, to the board. We think that's important. The issue around whether the board is represented by so-called experts or stakeholders, I think, misses the point, frankly, that we believe that stakeholders, well represented in government and both producers and procurers of electricity who adequately represent stakeholders, should be experts in the field. As I said, Chair, the ISMA boards will fail or succeed dependent on the competency and capability of the people involved in the board. And we believe it's crucially important to get subject matter experts who understand the industry well and that they are absolutely stakeholders as well. I agree with that. And then there are other matters which hopefully the members will have seen in our written submission. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosso. I'm sure those who will follow you would take cue from you as well, as how you have articulated your presentation. Questions, clarity seeking, and comments, honorable members? Thank you. Honorable Mloto, honorable Smale, my Mativela, in that order.
Thank you. You made a remark, but it's not in writing. On the financial viability of ISMO, to the effect that you'd want to see ISMO to be financially sustainable without putting an undue burden onto consumers. I would want to refer to you. I know you haven't commented on this, but I'm just linking it to the remark that you've made. So I would want to refer you to Section 33 of the bill, subsection 2, 2B, Roman figure 2. I'll read it to you for ease of reference. It's on borrowing secured by ISMO assets and revenue. It says that 2A, and any interest due in respect of any securities remains unpaid for 3 months after demand therefore in writing has been lodged with ISMO, the holder thereof may apply to a high court having jurisdiction for the appointment of a receiver of the revenues and assets referred to in subsection 1. B, the court may, Roman figure 2, in particular order that any prices of electricity supplied or to be supplied, be increased to meet the deficit and the exercise of such order does not require the sanction of any authority. Don't you find that statement to be problematic? Is it not going to lead, one, to a situation where it can put an an undue burden on consumers, given that the courts, if I'm reading the statement correctly, can then determine that the electricity prices have to be increased to meet the deficit. Secondly, would you agree with me that the court would then be encroaching on the powers of NERSA? Because I would assume that it's the role of NERSA to determine the increase of electricity prices after conducting public hearings and having due regard to various factors. Why then would we want to place, I know you're not the department, I'm just putting it to you, why would we then have to place the type of regulatory responsibility on determination of electricity prices to cost? But linking to your earlier statement on undue pressures to consumers. The last one, you talked about, and I lost that section in the bill, where you talk about staggering. It's in your submission, staggering of board members. And last night when I was going through this, I realized that it was provided for. I'll just have to go and look for it. That in the composition of the board, the issue of staggering had been mentioned. I just lost it, but I can come back to you about that.
Honourable Smalley.
Yes, Chairperson. Clearly there's a probe for diminishing red tape, especially when it comes to the procurement of the services. And little was also said about the management of the transmission lines. Which would EIUG then argue that greater emphasis should be then put into the definition section in order to clear out those wording and coming under ISMO customers, the willing buyer, willing seller, should that also be addressed there? And no, thanks, Chair. I think others will be for the department when they actually come.
Member Tuella.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'll also be going on to the same thing, so I must say I'm covered. Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
So it's, you talked about, in your submission, you talked about staggering, and if you go to Section 10, Subsection 5, it talks about the term of office of members may be rotated and staggered in order to ensure efficiency and continuity. Would that not address your concerns?
Mr. Russell.
Thank you, Chair. I'm honored by the questions. I'm not quite sure I'm capable of answering them, but I will attempt to at least respond to the extent that I've one understood them and also probably give some clarity on them. With regards to financial viability, the Honourable Member raised, I think, two key issues. The one was on the one side the so-called viability of the entity, ISMO, but at the other side the protection of consumers. and the question, if I just rephrase, was would the issues with regards to the clauses referred to under Section 33, I think, 2B, would that not put undue pressure on consumers? And also, would that not be, in terms of the court's powers, they're encroaching on nurses' authority and competencies? The first thing to highlight is I think we need to separate two issues, and I didn't in my submission, so I apologize. So, The issue that I referred to was actually the operating costs of ISMO, and the point that I was making there was really that ISMO should not be an additional burden, but really should be funded that of costs which are currently already incurred for its performance and function and services. So it should not add undue additional costs to the industry as a whole. The second point, which I think the Honourable Member was referring to, was specifically related to interest charges and loans, and I would presume this was in relation to possibly the primary function of the ISMO as well. And I think I would agree there that there needs to be further clarification that there is accountability on the part of ISMO, that it does not, by way of its decisions and also in terms of its deliberations, add additional costs to the end consumers by way of poor decisions, and consequently these then will then flow through to the consumers at large. So I think I would agree with the member that there needs to be some clarification around that in terms of its accountability to minimize the impact of that or the risk of that. With regards to staging of the board, I thank the member for qualifying and pointing out the details in the bill as it stands, although I would emphasize again an issue of phraseology. It says may. Do we understand that to mean that it will or it may? And we're not quite sure what that is referring to. So we agree that the bill intention is to ensure that there is adequate staging of members through its period, but the word was may rather than should or will. In regards to the Honourable Member's questions around red tape and particularly the management of the transmission lines, we do believe that there needs to be greater clarification to detail that this risk will not come about. So we would support that. In fact, we need to look at the wording and phraseology around that. With regards to willing buyer and willing seller, I think at the moment as it stands, it's assumed that the Electricity Regulation Act to be amended will deal with this issue. We do not believe that is sufficient, and we think the bill as it currently is written should be looking at its phraseology and clarification to resolve this issue. Chair, I want to make the point about willing buyer, willing seller, that many, and I've spoken to many of the investors in solar and green power and the prospective investors in solar and green power, wish to proceed at some stage on willing buyer, willing seller, whereby there are people that are keen to procure green energy or carbonless energy to in terms of their plans for carbon reduction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rousseau. I should have said Meridian Economics must be ready. We're going to be a bit firm with the time management. Honourable members may have to just grab our teas because we are running already 10 minutes late. And as you know, 10 minutes can grow to 20 minutes. And so on and so on. And we really need to also look at the report for the budget voting during lunchtime before we go to EPCs. Can I welcome Mr. Pickering? Welcome again. It's over to you, sir.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, it is a pleasure to have the opportunity to address you on this topic today. Why is the ISMO important? I think to reflect a little on the history of the industry in South Africa, I came across a quote which seemed appropriate, which went, it was in the Cape Times in May 1882, so that's 140 years ago. And the comment there was that the House of Assembly, which could very well be this building, continues to be lighted by the electric light, and the result has so far been highly satisfactory. The light is full, clear, pervasive, and steady, and greatly improves the appearance of the chamber. And I think we'd all agree that without electricity, life would not nearly be as pleasant as it is. At that time, there was no ESCOM, and electricity was provided generally by private generators. And that continued for around 40 years to be the case. Electricity generation was largely set up by private companies, mainly supplying the gold mines around Johannesburg and the diamond mines in Kimberley. And in the early 1920s, governments sat back and said, what is the best way to organize this industry? And commissioned some engineers from a company called Mertz and McClellan, who were an English engineering firm. They wrote a report which suggested that the industry would be better organized by consolidating it and building larger power stations. As a result of that, government passed the Electricity Act and created the Electricity Supply Commission, which is basically the beginning of ESCOM. And from that point on, ESCOM began to buy up the private generators until in 1948 it bought the largest of them all, which was called the Victoria Falls Power Company. In fact, it expropriated the VFP in accordance with the Power Act of 1910 and the Electricity Act of 1922. And at that time, probably ESCOM controlled about 80% of generation in the country. And that trend has very much continued up until today of public sector ownership in generation and less private sector ownership. In the early 2000s, government realized that the burden on the public purse was likely to become too great, and that we needed to find a way to attract private investment into the sector. And a policy was passed by Cabinet that 30% of new generation would be in the form of private investment, or what's called independent power producers. And I will reflect on the next slide about what we've achieved since that policy was passed. So at this stage, less than 5% of generation capacity is in private hands, and there has been virtually no investment by private generators since 1922. So we have a framework which is nearly 100 years old, which has been very much about encouraging state-owned power production and discouraging investment by private producers. So the ISMO, to answer the question of why is it important, it's important because it's going to attempt to reverse nearly 100 years of a particular way of governing this industry and try to create conditions that will encourage private investment. And the question we must ask ourselves is, will it succeed? If we look at what's happened since 2001, when government set out its policy that 30% of new generation capacity should come from the private sector, and I'm looking here not at what's planned, I'm looking at what has actually happened. And I'm measuring this in terms of the investment decisions that have been taken in the last 11 years. In 2003, Cabinet took a decision that ESCOM should build 1,000 megawatts of peaking plant, and the Department of Energy should procure a similar 1,000 megawatts from IPPs. So that's the first investment decision. In 2004, and possibly some in 2005, government approved a whole string of investment decisions by ESCOM. There was the return to service program, or the demothballing program of 3 mothballed power stations, and the massive investments of Medupi and Kusili, and then also a fairly significant investment in Ngula, the pump storage station. Altogether, ESCOM's capital program, as you well know, something around 500 billion rand. In 2006, slow progress was being made on the PICA that the Department of Energy was procuring, and government approved ESCOM going ahead with an additional 1,000 megawatts of PICA plants. In fact, today in 2012, that 2003 decision around the department procuring 1,000 megawatts has still to come to fruition. we've seen 9 years pass, so we still haven't reached an investment decision on that plant. And it's questionable, in fact, whether it is even needed still. That tells you that it's not easy. Things can go wrong. Procuring IPPs is an extraordinarily complex process, and we need institutions that will be good at it. Finally, in 2010, we had the first investment decisions around new private generation capacity through the MTPP program, which procured 273 megawatts. So as we stand in 2012, we've had public investment decisions of around 16,000 megawatts by Eskom, and we've had private investment of around 273 megawatts, less than 2%, a long, long way away from the 30%. This is what's actually happened, and we must learn from this, because I think one of the key lessons it tells us is that we haven't had the right institutions, the right processes, the right capacity to go about attracting private sector investment, and that is why the ISMO is particularly important. Now, we should very soon, in the next couple of months, achieve investment decisions for around 1,400 megawatts of renewable IPPs. If we include those in the mix, we get closer to 20%, but we're still well short of the 30%. Now, it's important to locate the ISMO in a broader understanding of what are we doing with the electricity sector. And there is something called the standard model, which is how globally countries and academics tend to understand reform of the electricity sector. And I'm sure you've seen many versions of this picture. Basically, vertically integrated utilities go through a process of vertical and horizontal disaggregation. So the generation is broken up into many units to compete, and we disaggregate the value chain of the industry. Now, that's not the model that is being followed in South Africa. What we are following is a hybrid model. It's important that we don't try and understand the world with the wrong model. We need to understand what is the hybrid model, how does it work, and what does it take. So the hybrid model is much simpler. A series of legal and organizational reforms basically will separate out some key functions from Eskom. So what are those functions? What needs to be isolated from Eskom to make the hybrid model work effectively and to enable independent power producers to enter the generation sector? There are six key functions that need to be performed. Planning is the first one. We need a plan which sets out what kind of new capacity has to be built. We need to be clear about whether that plan is a mandatory plan or it's an indicative plan. Whether it's exclusive, as in only things that are in this plan can be built, or whether it's going to have flexibility. The legislation at this stage is not particularly clear on these questions. Secondly, we need a process that allocates opportunities between the public sector and the private sector. That process must also deal with the case of somebody who arrives with a good idea that wasn't in the plan, what's called an unsolicited bid. We need to be able to deal with unsolicited bids. At present, the legislation doesn't address that question. Thirdly, that has to be executed. We have to go through a process of procurement for the private sector side. That's well understood. We're developing a lot of experience with that through this renewable energy program to understand where to allocate risks, what's the legal framework for it. But what we haven't done is develop the capacity to execute that again and again and again. The current renewable energy program, as was the case with the PECA procurement, is entirely dependent on consultants, many of whom fly in from overseas. This is an expensive way of doing it, and it isn't a sustainable way of doing it. We need to develop that as far as possible in-house, in an institution that can go on getting better and better at procuring and allocating those risks in a more and more effective way. Fourthly, there has to be a buyer. That buyer has to be independent of the interests of any generator. This is why it's one of the functions that has to come out of Eskom, so that there is no conflict of interest. Fifthly, there's the system operator, which has to dispatch these power stations once they are built. That has to be done fairly, and again, there can't be an interest in the system operator that overlaps with any generator. Lastly, there's the question of transmission. The world is going to look very different in future from the way it does now, with a group of large coal-fired power stations on the Highveld. We will have gas, we will have nuclear, we will have wind, solar scattered all over the country. The grid will have to do very different things from what it has done in the past. It will have to respond to many different clients, and that in itself is a challenge. So these six functions, how will they be allocated under the current legislation? And I must point out here that I'm not restricting my comments to the ISMO bill alone. The comments also apply to the Second Amendment Act to the Second Amendment Bill to the Electricity Regulation Act. The two have to be read together, and I know that the second is still to serve at this committee, but it is not possible to understand the ISMO Bill in isolation of the Electricity Regulation Act. The effect of these two acts is to create a new institution, the ISMO, and to award three of the six functions to the ISMO. Those three are procurement, the buyer function, and the system operator function. Those are the three least contentious of the functions. They are largely about executing what comes out the first two functions, which are planning and the allocation decision. As previous speakers have mentioned, the ISMO will not control the planning process. It will not write the plan. It will merely provide input to the minister, who will make the decision about the plan under the current legislation. The ISMO will have no input at all under this legislation into the allocation process. Now, that creates the possibility of disjunctures in this whole process. And that is what we see as the key risk to this legislation, is that we don't have an integrated approach. The last function, transmission, is left with Eskom, and we don't believe that's the most effective way to do things either. And I will go on to comment in more detail on those three functions, planning, allocation, and transmission. In general, we welcome the decision to restructure the industry to create an ISMO. We agree that the hybrid model is the only practical way forward for South Africa at the moment, but we would caution that that model is more difficult to implement than it may first appear. Many countries have attempted the hybrid model, and many have found that in practice, decisions take much longer, procurement takes much longer, and things don't actually happen. We think that by integrating all six of these key functions into the ISMO, we would have better results. So we recommend that instead of scattering the functions around between the Minister, Eskom, and the ISMO, all six should be consolidated within one institution. This is a very common approach. Many countries have this approach. It's generally known as the Transmission System Operator, or the TSO. You will have seen this picture many times, I'm sure. This is the 20-year integrated resource plan. And you will know that the dark green blocks were supposed to have decisions in 2011 and the light green blocks in 2012. That's because to actually get capacity online in the years that are indicated there, there's a long process that has to go on ahead of that to develop those projects, permit those projects, finance those projects, and construct those projects. We are well behind already on executing this plan. And there's one thing to have a plan, but it's another thing to go through the step of allocating responsibility for this plan. Now, the minister has had responsibility for planning and allocation since the 2006 Electricity Regulation Act. It took until 2011 to produce the first credible long-term plan. Since then, the minister has yet to make a determination about which portions of this plan should be done by Eskom and which should be done by independent power producers. She has indicated that she will issue a determination that 3,725 megawatts of renewables should be done by independent power producers, but this has yet to be gazetted. Until the minister makes this determination, NERSA cannot license any investments outside of the integrated resource plan. So, consequently, it is very difficult and very risky for independent power producers to invest in project development without certainty around the legal framework. Our point simply is that it takes a long time for these things to get done when they're left in the hands of ministers. The evidence on this is very clear because we have had 6 years with these functions sitting in the minister's hands. Now, you can get things done, as this slide shows. All of those countries with blue have independent power producers. None of them have implemented, well, barring one perhaps, have implemented the standard model. They're all hybrid type markets where they are state-owned enterprises operating in parallel with IPPs. And across Africa, there are at least 40 IPPs operating in 15 countries, at least 10 gigawatts of power. That's at least $8 billion of investment. It can be done. It takes concerted government action to get it done. The rest of Africa is way ahead of South Africa in this regard. So we recommend that the ISMO should be responsible for planning and allocation rather than the minister for these four reasons. The ISMO will have the capacity and the expertise to do it. The minister relied very heavily on Eskom and the Eskom system operator and generation planning divisions to produce that plan, and that would continue to be the case. The minister is not going to develop that expert capacity within her department. The ISMO will have the data that's needed to do the planning, the demand side and supply side data. If the minister has the responsibility but it's actually done by the ISMO, you have a situation where there is really a split accountability, and that's never healthy. Much better to assign that accountability very clearly to one institution and hold it accountable for getting that done. Lastly, planning needs to be closely linked to procurement. As the PICA project demonstrates, procurement can go wrong. Plans, therefore, need to be adjusted. We can't assume that because something's in the plan, it's going to happen. We need to have feedback loops that operate efficiently and effectively. We don't believe the minister should be responsible for planning and allocation for several reasons. As I mentioned earlier, the ministry lacks the capacity to undertake what are very technical and complex planning functions. We also don't believe that the minister has to actually perform the function in order to influence it. The minister has sufficient powers already to determine policy and to influence planning and allocation. So, for instance, government has a policy that 30% of new capacity should be from independent power producers. That's adequate direction for the ISMA. We also believe the minister should avoid getting into a situation where she faces any conflicts of interest. In particular, we do not believe it's healthy for the minister to develop projects. It's a very expensive business, developing power projects. The cost of developing the sites for the PICA project and running that transaction process is many, many tens of millions of rands. The minister would be very reluctant to abandon that process and come to Parliament and say, I'm afraid we've had fruitless and wasted expenditure. So there will always be a temptation to press on with a project like that and try and bring it to completion. That's a conflict of interest. The minister should be above these things. The minister should be one of the checks and balances in the process that when something's going wrong, should be able to step in and correct it. Another check and balance that's important and which this legislation is missing is the generation licensing process. A project that is promoted by the minister, approved by the minister, in the minister's plan, and which the minister has allocated to the private sector to perform, has to have some check somewhere in the system. At present, NERSA is obliged to license that project under the Electricity Regulation Act. There is no check and balance in the system at the moment. Who stands to protect the interests of the consumer if NERSA doesn't? That is NERSA's primary mandate. It must have the power to reject a project. So we recommend then that the legislation should be amended to transfer planning and allocation functions to the ISMO explicitly, with provision for ministerial guidance via explicit regulations and also provision for NERSA to review generation licenses. Our last point is around the transmission function. As I've mentioned earlier, the grid is going to be the key bottleneck to many generation projects in coming years. We recommend that transmission should be transferred to the ISMA. We think this would overcome Eskom's conflicts of interest. It is the dominant generator and will remain the dominant generator for many decades to come. If it also controls the grid, it will always have an incentive to ensure that grid planning and investment works for its own projects before it works for the competitors. We believe that transferring these assets to the ISMO would strengthen its balance sheet. This will assist with its role as the buyer. And we believe that separating transmission out from generation would help to achieve a more balanced approach between supply side and demand side solutions. I'm sure you've heard of the term the smart grid. Smart grid is all about achieving more efficient ways to balance supply and demand, and therefore it needs to be protected from conflicts of interest. This process of vertical disaggregation is a very common mode of industry reform across the world. Lenders and investors should be very familiar with it and shouldn't be too concerned about Eskom's disagreements with this approach. So in conclusion, South Africa requires massive investment in new generation capacity in coming decades. Eskom and governments are well aware and have frequently conceded that they cannot afford to do this alone. IPPs are needed to enter this industry. They bring innovation and they bring capital, and we are seeing this already with the renewable energy program. The introduction of IPPs needs to be speeded up. We have lost a decade, effectively, already. And the best way of speeding it up is by establishing a dedicated, competent, state-owned entity that is independent of Eskom and which is tasked with all six of these functions to make a hybrid market model work. And we think that the ISMO can do this. It just needs to be given the authority in the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Meneer. Honourable members, over to you. And Adam Lotto.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to have a bit of discussion with the presenter on the issue of the transmission lines. From a practical point of view, how would we have these transmission lines to Eskom? Do we do without consideration of the transfer of this assets from Eskom? And I think it's said to be around 50 billion rand. So how do we do that? The sale from Eskom to ISMO. Who pays for that sale? Does the state have the capacity or the financial resources to be able to pay for that sale from Eskom to ISMO? The second question linked to that, if we have an arrangement where everybody has access to the grid, subject to them complying the code and other regulations, But then NERSA is given the powers to determine the fee for the use of the grid. What threat would that pose to independent power producers? Because then the power to decide on the use of the grid would lie somewhere else with NERSA.
Honorable Speller. Yeah, Honorable Spank.
I can hear you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to go on a little bit further from Honorable Maloto, is the looking at the challenges and a slow offtake, would you then argue that the structuring of the pricing needs to be re-looked at? Would you then also argue that I would try to understand, have the state actually determine the cost of the maintenance of that transmission line, what it will actually cost, who will maintain that, and where will the costing of the maintenance of that transmission line comes then from, if you then put that over to all six into one? How do you see that? And if we just being the middleman transferring from one to another, you know, from the seller to the buyer, from the buyer to the seller. Just some ideas from there, please. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. It's enlightening. I mean, my questions are similar to the other two speakers around the transmission grid. I imagine that we would have to charge a fee both for the maintenance of the grid, but also then for the expansion of the grid and those decisions about where to expand, because particularly with a lot of renewable energy projects, the base site for them in some cases is far away from the grid at the moment. So how would we make those decisions around the expansion and who would pay for that expansion? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that one. But also, I mean, what you're saying with regards to the ILP and the fact that firm decisions haven't been made, and clearly at the moment we're in a very tight situation with regards to electricity in South Africa. And clearly, as we've seen from Exxaro, for instance, and their combination with Tata Energy, a lot of big energy-intensive companies are clearly wanting to partner with independent power producers, independent of government structures even, to ensure their future energy security. So would you not say then that we have to allow for wheeling through the grid? And how would you see that operating in terms of this, in terms of the planning function? Because some of that extra capacity would, I suppose, fall out of the IRP. It would be a kind of investment decision taken by a private company as opposed to it being stipulated according to the IRP. And how would you see that working?
Can I try? Very briefly, once again, how different is the standard model from the hybrid procurement? What are the key issues? Unfortunately, I understand the hybrid because it has been presented several times, but it's also of helps us to, you know, be clear about the differences and similarities, particularly in this journey of for processing the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll address the questions in the order they came. The first question related to transmission lines, the transmission system, and how it could be transferred out of Eskom to the ISMO. I think the answer to that is fairly simple. Both Eskom and the ISMO are state-owned enterprises, 100% state-owned, and consequently there would be no loss of shareholder value if the asset is transferred from one state-owned entity to another. It can be achieved legally by a shareholder resolution. We've seen assets, for instance, recently transferred between AXA and Transnet, and of course there's going to be some haggling about it, but it certainly can be done. It could be done at a valuation which reflects fair market value, but there is no legal or economic impediment that I'm aware of to achieving that. We spent a great deal of time with the regional electricity distributors looking at models for transferring distribution assets between state-owned entities, and there were plenty of solutions to achieving that. So I have little doubt that it can be done. Of course, if one doesn't want it to happen, one can find lots of reasons for why it shouldn't happen, but these things can happen. Secondly, on the question of open access to the transmission network and what sort of fee would be charged for that, the answer to that is also reasonably simple. It would simply be about carrying on doing what we do, which is that NERSA sits at regular intervals. At the moment, it's every 3 years, and contemplates the cost base of the regulated utility, which at the moment is Eskom with its three licenses for distribution, generation, and transmission, and applies a rate of return methodology to determine what is a fair tariff. The same thing would apply to ISMA for its transmission system activities. It would have a regulated tariff, and it would charge that tariff to whoever uses the grid, both those who put power into the grid and those who take power out of the grid. That's a very normal regulatory process. Thirdly, there was the question about the slow uptake of independent power producers and a question of whether pricing is the issue and who pays for the maintenance of the transmission line. I think there's two parts to that question. The payment for the transmission line, really, I have answered already. It would be a regulated tariff. This is a monopoly service. It has to be regulated to prevent monopoly pricing abuse. On the first question of is pricing the issue around IPP uptake, I'm not sure. It is, of course, partly the issue. It's very difficult for new entrants in the market to compete with Eskom, which has depreciated all the power stations. So yes, in that sense, pricing is an issue. But a much more fundamental issue is that there is no market. There is no way that any investor can arrive in South Africa and say, I'm going to build a power station and sell my power. There are many legal hurdles which have been created over the years that have to be overcome before you can make an investment like that, before a bank will lend you the money. And there simply is no market at the moment. That is what the ISMA would have to contribute towards solving. The fourth question related to the expansion plan for the transmission system. How that would work. That is a difficult question. In planning public infrastructure, it is always going to be about trade-offs. When roads are built, when railways are built, when airports are built, there's an opportunity cost of building something in one place and not building it in another place. And that's why these planning functions are very important. And are very contested and need to be governed appropriately and need to be conducted professionally and in an open way, and need to be done regularly and to incorporate learning from previous planning cycles. So I'm afraid there isn't a simple answer to that. It's a complex process of looking at what are the available energy resources, what kind of mix do we have, what are all the policies that have to be taken into account when we make these trade-offs. But one thing is clear, it's best that that's done by an independent body that doesn't have a stake in any of the generation projects that are out there on the map. The Then there was a question about the integrated resource plan and whether we should allow for wheeling and projects that are outside of the plan. So, again, that's not an easy question. South Africa is going to face commitments at an international level at some point around its carbon emissions. It would not be responsible of the government to allow anybody who wants to build a coal-fired power station. There will have to be considerations around, how much of that fuel we are going to use versus other fuels. So I wouldn't advocate a complete free-for-all on anyone who wants to building any kind of power station they want. There will have to be policy frameworks in place to guide that. But I certainly would support the idea that within those broad frameworks, it should be possible for willing buyers and willing sellers to get together and not face insurmountable red tape, licensing processes, and unfriendly administrative systems in order to strike a deal. So, for instance, green projects and buyers who want to buy green power, there really should be no reason other than normal environmental impact assessments and normal financing considerations to prevent those kinds of deals, bilateral deals being done. The last question was, how different is the standard model from the hybrid model? Chair, all of these models are simplifications of reality, and in fact, if one goes and looks at how Chile has applied its system versus how England and Wales did it versus New Zealand versus Australia and so on, they all have somewhat different approaches. So it's not as if there is a single clear model out there. What I think we would find if we implement the hybrid model effectively is that you will in fact see competition beginning to come in various ways. So bilateral deals being facilitated by the ISMO would be a form of competition. And the next kind of market you're likely to see would be ancillary, the market for ancillary services. So that's reactive power, standby power, black start, and other forms of services that the system operator requires in order to balance the system. That commonly is the beginnings of a competitive market. In time, there may be more competition or there may not, but those are the kinds of decisions that get taken along the road on the basis of a sound set of operating institutions, which is what we don't have at the moment. I'm sorry to have ducked your question.
I'm glad you've confessed that. Still time, any more take, honourable members? Yes, honourable Herling, then honourable Mloto.
I'm just wondering, I mean, just following through the train of thought with regards to wheeling, I hear what you're saying in terms of the carbon constraint, and perhaps one of the ways of doing it is to say that any company that procures from a generator would need to procure a certain percentage of clean energy in order to ensure that some of those requirements are met. I don't know, would that be a way of dealing with some of those problems?
I think the answers to this question are going to come from the debates around the carbon tax versus the carbon budget approach, which National Planning Commission and Treasury are currently, I think, leading the way on those debates. The issuing of licenses to build or not build a power station is a fairly blunt instrument, but it's a very absolute instrument. And I think in the policy mix, we're going to have to decide, are we going to use those kind of blunt instruments, or are we going to go for more of the economic instruments, the taxes, the cap and trade type instruments? Those decisions are still to be taken. And, you know, if you have a carbon tax of $50 a ton, then suddenly a coal project is just not looking viable anymore. Yeah? And we'll see inevitably the dash to gas. It's a certainty that we will see investment in gas-fired power station in this country in preference to coal, which is larger, dirtier, takes longer to build, and has a whole lot of environmental liabilities upstream and downstream. And that's what's happened in many countries around the world, and it's inevitably going to happen here.
Yes, Tadimla.
Yeah, when I was shaking your head on your response on the loss, the possible that there won't be any loss to Eskom, the reason being mainly that when lenders lend money to Eskom, they view Eskom as a complete entity, and when they assess its balance sheet would be composed of various assets. So if you take one of the assets out, then the balance sheet of Eskom look different. So that's the reason why I was asking you that question. From a practical point, do you transfer this asset of Eskom to another entity without any consideration, without any value, or without any compensation? That was the main question. That this is from a practical point of view. If it's for a consideration, then the arguments become different. But if just a free transfer of assets from Eskom to a different entity, then raise serious problems for lenders, because they would be viewing the balance sheet of Eskom differently.
Absolutely, I must agree with the Honourable Member. It's not something that government should go about doing irresponsibly as some kind of expropriation move. This is something that gets accountants very excited, and there will be many cunning plans to achieve a transfer of the assets and whatever associated liabilities in the form of corporate debt need to go across to the ISMA. There are absolutely solutions to this. I'm not in any way suggesting that the assets should be transferred without addressing the impact of the ISKCON balance sheet and the ISMA balance sheet, and indeed government's own balance sheet, in whatever form of contingent liabilities are created as a result of that kind of restructuring. But restructuring like that is commonplace around the world and can be done here.
From my side, in your original submission, you say in your conclusion that you recommend that Parliament considers revising the two bills before it to fully empower ISMO to manage the evolution of this important sector. You said you recommend that this Parliament considers revising the two bills before it fully empowers ISMO to value the evolution. I would assume that it's the ISMO bill and the Electricity Regulation Act bill. It just occurred to me that that's one area I wanted to check from you. And also, somewhere also around the your argument on allocation, you say you prefer to see a more robust approach, such as the use of competitive bidding between Eskom and IPPs. I think you were, in fact, before that, your view on feasibility studies that they are a weak method of performing the allocation function. My question is now, why can't NERSAG contribute to the finalization of the terms of reference of the feasibility bill, because it's already an independent regulatory body? Just the thought struck me, you know, without being judgmental to your position of being critical of feasibility studies.
Chair, to answer your question, I'm going to referred back to the integrated resource plan. So you'll see there are 8 forms of generation technology there. And the task of allocation is about deciding which of these projects or technologies or programs, whatever one wants to call them, should be done by Eskom and which should be done by the private sector. Now, some of it is obvious. The nuclear program, there's no private nuclear program in the world. Nuclear is always done with very heavy state involvement. So there's going to be no private nuclear IPPs in South Africa. And some of it's like the small renewable projects are just beneath Eskom and will fall to the private sector. But in between, decisions have to be made about, you know, is it going to be a public or private investment? How do you make those decisions? Now, you can do a study and I can do a study, or I can do two studies that will show completely contradictory results. It all depends on your assumptions. Your assumptions around cost of capital, your assumptions around efficiency, your assumptions around delays, your assumptions around interest during construction. I mean, I work every day with these financial models that you know, value power projects, and they are enormously complex, and it's very easy to push the result one way or the other. So terms of reference are one thing, but the assumptions you use can completely bias the results. So I would question whether, you know, doing feasibility studies is at all useful in making these allocation decisions. One way that I don't have an answer to this. I don't have an answer, I'm afraid. I think that what we need is certainty more than anything else. We need decisions to be made. We need decisions to say this gas program is going to be done privately or publicly. You know, so then as a private developer, I cannot worry about gas because I know it's going to be done by Eskom, but I can worry a lot about wind and hydro and nuclear. Not nuclear, solar, because that's the area I must focus on, and I can start investing and developing projects there. So certainty is what counts. How you get to certainty, there's many ways to get to certainty. But one way that we suggested in the paper is possibly to say, let's have a bit of a bidding process between Eskom and private investors to build, you know, this plant or the next plant. Let's have expressions of interest. Let's see you know, who would like to do it. Rather than just relying on some consultants to go through a modeling exercise and tell you the answer that you knew from the beginning.
Okay. Let me thank you very much, Mr. Pickering. Honorable members, I know I had gone through Mr. Pickering's original, and I had a lot of questions which seems he has answered, but still you're not off the hook. I'll go through it again, and if there's anything I feel that I should have asked, I'll still sneak that question back. You're a stone throw away. Honorable members, can we take a break now?
Have the key. Look, I'm telling you, I even left the police where coming. Oh, that's a moment. That's another one thing that I really pray to God that I don't die in my husband and die. Otherwise, what will be after the trauma? The police will come to bring me a weapon. I'm telling you, I'm really breathing. I'm just feeling emotional. I said, yeah. I mean, let alone. Okay, well, it was the thing. I mean, this guy, he didn't want it. The only place that is available, I thought, made it for the wind.
Well,
but I'm going to for my other one on Thursday.
Okay. Well, I was thinking maybe to. I don't know. I can't remind you about
the
No progress on my side, but I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but there is those people are not responding yet. There's the request that you made, I mean, not you for that matter, the angle, the ambassador to Zambia. But this request was really the ambassador's mother's place. And the problem was electricity.
In
so they asked in Pretoria. So they asked us to do that and see what's it. No, he replied, those guys are not responding. And I've been sending the messages to the team. What do they call it? That repetition was. Yeah, repetition. They're not responding. You know. I know it's a problem.
Don't get guarded
versus who, no, not that one. Who. Is it a new area? The one was really good.
But
he
built the whole house.
The whole house?
Yes,
okay. I'm going to tell you. Jack. Jack. What was Jack? Yeah. What is Jack?
That's
a technical thing. You will get back. I just say.
But maybe if we ask him now, because now he's coming to me saying
okay. Let me just throw it
this way.
Yeah, let me throw it this way. Because really, I mean, this thing, and also this, I mean, this bill still kept it coming.
Bandido,
yeah.
Even if you can't, I'm sure there's somebody can help.
To do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll try and help you, maybe.
Sure. Yeah. But I know it's.
I've already paid yesterday, second two. In the manner that they have, I'm owing them now how much.
No, we're talking about the home one or this one?
The home one. So, you know, I was supposed to pay
7,000. Yeah, 7,000, yeah.
So I paid 8,000. The remaining four, I paid. So that's how we basically progression is being fair.
Oh well, that's how it is. You start with a lot of your homes first before you come to hotels.
I will get it from him and then I'll
put it on the
website.